Now, I don't know if I'm filled with the Holy Spirit in the same way as Zechariah, but I kind of like the game he's playing with naming his kid. When my wife Erica was maybe 6 months pregnant, she was walking down Commercial Drive and somebody yelled to her, "Consider danger as a name, boy or girl." And she came home and we talked about it for a little while. And we're like, that's just crazy. That is not us at all. And so we were working on what this name would be. We were trying to figure out what would we call this human who was growing inside Erica's tummy. And one day in February, he was born in our dining room. And the midwives asked, "So what will you call him?" And we said, "We will call him Jacob." We called him Jacob, and we couldn't really think about what else we would call him. We knew that he would have some middle names, but we weren't quite sure what we were going to call him. Erica kept on circling around to the name Danger, and I was like, "I just can't do it, I just can't do it, I just can't do it." But what about Francis? That's a really great name. The Pope wasn't the Pope yet, but like, I really like St. Francis and Francis. She's like, "I'll give you Francis if you give me Danger." And so our firstborn is named Jacob Francis Danger. I don't know what that will bring for him, except perhaps leading a rock band or something. Jacob Francis Danger, man. I'm gonna buy the website. But where that has taken me is a reflection on home, on what it means to have a home, on what it means to create a home. Erica and I, we had a home together before Jacob arrived, and then we needed to figure out what would it mean to create a home with then three people, and when Jacob's brother was born, with four people. And that sense of home and belonging was important not just for us, but also for creating a space of home and belonging, of peace and of love for all of us, and not just those of us who are members of our family, but those who came to visit. When we hear the words from the prophet Isaiah, "Comfort, O comfort my people," says our God, this is on the heels of deep lament and grief. It's on the heels of the destruction of the temple, of the fall of Jerusalem. It's on the heels of being sent into exile, like the Egyptian exile, like being taken away into slavery that time. This is the second time that Israel is experiencing this displacement. Their home has been stripped from them. They're not sure what to do. They're not sure where to go. And the entire book of Lamentations is actually an introduction to the passages that we read in Isaiah tonight. Isaiah 40 to 55 or so, Second Isaiah, comes after the lament of Lamentations. And if you're looking for a good cry, I recommend it. There is no hope in Lamentations. And so it's out of that place, a place of utter despair, a sense of displacedness, a sense of homelessness, that these words come from God through the prophet. "Comfort, O comfort my people," says your God. "Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term, that her penalty is paid, that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins." And it's true that the community of Israel has had its sins. In fact, from the beginning of the book of Isaiah, the prophet is very clear that the worship that Israel has been offering and the way in which it's been treating its most vulnerable people are at odds with one another. And so there has been this time of disorientation and judgment. and they've had to figure out what it means to be in community together, and a community that is rooted in the sense of shalom that God is constantly calling God's people to. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the place of shalom, the community of shalom, has been torn to shreds, and into this place God speaks the impossible word. Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. A voice cries out in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain hill shall be made low. Reminds me of Saskatchewan. The uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places a plain. And then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all the people shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. The thing that's interesting to me in this passage is that these words do not come from human lips. They are an impossible pronouncement from the divine. They are an impossible pronouncement from a God who knows that this is a people in deep trouble, a people in deep turmoil, who are suffering from being in exile. They're suffering from the hurts that they inflict on one another and that they have received from their Babylonian captors. This is not a rational voice. In fact, it is a prophetic voice that beats through the prose and the royal consciousness that would have you believe that nothing is impossible but what is right here in front of you. For whatever reason today, I've had these words from U2 in my head, and I haven't listened to U2 in probably a decade, but here we go. It's that line that says, you got stuck in a moment and you can't get out of it. And what the prophet is saying and what God is saying through the prophet is exactly that. You have got stuck in a moment, you can't get out of it. It will not happen through your own effort. It will not happen through figuring your way out. It will not happen through arguing this in another way. But how it will all take place, how your liberation will come, will be through a new word brought by the Creator of all, the God who calls us all beloved and who inspires us with God's very breath. All people are like grass. Their constancy is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades. We are all part of God's good creation. And yet when the breath of the Lord blows upon it, surely the people are grass. And if we were to pay attention in those grassy fields, we would feel the breath of God breathing through us, breathing in us. We would actually hear the sound of the grass. You hear the sound of God's breath. If we would slow down to listen. The temptation in the midst of exile, the temptation in the midst of feeling displaced, is to jump from Good Friday all the way to resurrection. It's to skip the hard parts. It's to skip the disorientation and destruction of Good Friday and Holy Saturday and get to Easter resurrection. The temptation is to anoint a Messiah before they prove their goodness. The temptation is to create a scapegoat so we don't have to deal with the real issues before us. The temptation is to run rather than seeing things through. The temptation is to stay, even when we know some place is not yet our home. And yet God calls us into the thick of these things. God calls us into the midst of this exile, and God offers comfort in this place. God offers comfort and invites us into hope, but not a naive optimism. That is not what hope is. Hope is forged in the fire of disappointment and grief. Walter Brueggemann, an Old Testament scholar, says that of 2 Isaiah, of chapters 40 to 55 of Isaiah, that these passages constitute a divine response to the work of grief, a work that permits hope. I think here at St. Bridget's, we are trying to create a home. We're trying to create a home for people who have been displaced and hurt by other expressions of Christian faith, for people who have experienced the hurt and the wounding of this world. And part of that means going through the hard bits. Part of that means going through the wounding that comes as a result of being human alongside one another. And a natural response in the midst of that work will be grief, and an acknowledged grief. So if you are feeling sadness tonight, if you are feeling grief, we all need to acknowledge that. Even though this time is hard, even though throughout this entire week I have felt personally in exile, as though this is less my home than it has been, I'm also feeling called by God to enter deeply into this space, to listen to everyone, to hear the joy and the beauty and the hurt and the pain of what has happened in this past week, and to wait on God's prophetic, energizing word, for a messenger to come up from the mountains to say, "Here is your God, behold, the Lord comes and will bring you out of this place." And sometimes that feels like it's an invitation to an alternate perception of reality. And that's exactly what we're looking for. We're looking for a world that is impossible without God. We're looking for a world in which all are cared for. And I think tonight we're looking to be a part of creating that, of calling that place into being, of renewing our commitment to creating a community where thriving, where flourishing are possible. I don't know how we get there, but I know that God will send that messenger. Where is she? I just pray that I am able to open my eyes and ears to where that messenger is, and that together we will be able to respond to what God is calling us to this evening.